presentation, I asked you to do the presentation, and you were there. Except that I forgot that you had scheduled domestic violence training for us today. So, so I've got, the mayor's gonna come next.
Yeah, but more so.
So he's a little less time to prepare, and I was actually speaking to the captain about.
Wait, I have it all, I have all the data, so I mean, it's not long.
No, we only have.
So we have time.
But then we'll talk about that in class. About how we now, because this is actually a practical application, what we do with that data. So I'm gonna present a scenario as to like problem, and then how we use the data that we collected, you know, surveys. And then how we make adjustments, three ways to address that. So let's say, so the scenario is basically that we're getting pedestrian struck. So we're gonna look at our data, and we'll probably expand on what the data says, and then identify what we're gonna do to solve if the pedestrians get struck.
Okay.
All right.
May I have your attention, please, okay? My name is Carol Levine, and I'm from the NASCA Association, NAASCA.org. That's the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse. That's what that stands for, okay? We also have a show, a radio show, called the Stop Child Abuse Now Show. And it's a good show. I've been there 5 years. I went on to tell my story, and I never left. So today I'm co-host, okay? I kind of like worked my way up, I guess. And I do a lot of presentations about child abuse and also about domestic violence. The two are really quite intertwined. Most families have kids, you know, a lot of kids involved. So I sort of like bring it together. Now what I do is we talk about domestic violence. I should not be here, I should be dead. It's as simple as that. My father, my biological father, was an alcoholic, and he was a very abusive alcoholic. And he didn't hit me, okay? But he did hit my mother, and he did hit my brother. I guess he liked me or something. I don't know. But the point is, I saw him one night, and I knew he was going to kill my mother. Just to give you a little tiny bit of background here. He had one of those heavy frying pans, the black ones, the skillets. And he was going to hit her in the head, and he was very, very drunk. And I know that he would have killed her with that, because I used to play with pots and pans like little girls do. Maybe little boys do too, I don't know. But anyway, the point is, I knew that if he hit her in the head, she'd be dead. They didn't know I was sneaking downstairs. I'm one of those snoopy kids. And I never really got over it. This is the way that I am. I go and I see, all right? I hear a noise, I go and I see. And they didn't know that I was watching them every night, you know, in terrible fights. And this particular night, I screamed, because I knew that would have been the end of it. So what happened was that stopped that fight. And for the first time, he slammed me hard against the stairwell. And he walked out, and he slammed the door so hard, all the glass broke, it shattered, went to the floor. And I hadn't seen him for a long time after that, because I was removed from that house, so was my brother. And I ended up in a pedophile's house. Don't have to tell you what happened there. I was there for a year and a half, almost two. And my brother was with his cushy grandparents that absolutely adored him. Not that I wanted him to be with someone bad, don't get me wrong. My brother's a nut, okay? So I don't have many feelings for him, not good ones. Now, with what you have to understand about child abuse is what it does to kids, okay? And what domestic violence does to kids. We at NASCA believe, and we've seen many, many instances of this, that even if you don't get hit, say you just watch things, you watch your parents fight, the ones that are supposed to love and nurture you, to guide you, you watch them fight and almost kill each other, it messes you up. Simple as that. Okay? You suffer from low self-esteem. You suffer from all kinds of nightmares, fear, you name it. And I had it. And I ended up with PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, which is any trauma for anyone. It can be for the veterans. They speak a lot about that. They do not talk enough about domestic violence, although it's coming out much more now, but still, child abuse is taboo. And that is just so stupid, because it exists. There are 850,000 kids, at least, who are sexually abused a year, sexually alone. That's violence right in the home. And then also, too, you have sexual abuse, you have violence, you have physical, emotional, neglect. 7 kids die a day. A day, do the math. And that's from neglect. I mean, maybe they're being beaten. Maybe they get beaten and they don't go to the hospital. And they die from internal injuries. Or maybe they're starved. We had a case of a little boy who was out in the backyard. He was like 1 of 5 kids. And all the kids knew he was there. But of course, they were told not to squeal. Or they'd be in trouble with daddy, okay? So he was in a cage, for God's sake, and they were like throwing food at him so he could eat a little bit to keep him alive. Well, they didn't keep him alive forever. He did die in that cage. Now, there are horrific stories that are true. Now, unfortunately, we hear about the horrific stories like that one, but we don't realize and stop and think that domestic violence, there's a 3 million kids a year that see, okay, to some form or other. Some people say, well, is domestic violence shoving? Is that considered to be, domestic violence? If you shove your spouse around or a kid around and shove them hard, that's domestic violence. Sorry. The kid could fall, hit his head, or the wife could fall, hit her head. And I do want to say something which might surprise you. 40% are actually men who get abused by women, okay? So when you go to a crime scene, or it could be a crime scene, you don't know until you get there, you get the call, you don't know what you're gonna find. So the police, they stand there, and they look to see which one has the blood on them, which one's beaten up. The first thing that you have to do is separate them, all right? That's number one. Because, and you don't know for sure exactly who the liar is, okay? One's gonna lie. But you separate them, but the one that is the bloodiest, they consider to be the victim, and the other one is considered to be the one that is the abuser. They don't stay in jail for long, they don't stay in custody for long. They have to go before the judge and all kinds of stuff. But nothing really takes that long to do. A lot of times, especially if it's a first-time offense, if they don't have a record on them, or her, they don't get much time. Now, with women, what they do with women is they help them. We have organizations that help. Like right in Warren County, we have the violence organization on Route 57, the domestic violence organization there, and they have all different kinds of little satellite divisions where they work with you, and if you're a woman, or a guy, but usually the women, they get you housing, You have to really want to leave though. This is the problem. You can go through all the steps of helping a woman who has children. And if she doesn't really want to leave, then chances are you're going through and you're doing all this stuff, getting them food stamps, getting them this, getting them housing, they can stay at the shelter for a while, and they end up going back to the spouse. Now this can happen many times, right, before they actually walk away. That's me. My first husband was gorgeous, but he was a nut. He had a Harley Davidson, and I was in love. I like Harleys. And he was the sweetest guy that ever walked the earth. Now, this is something a lot of these abusive men have in common. They'll open the door for you. They'll call you all kinds of cute names. They'll pull a chair out for you if they take you out for dinner. I mean, they are just Mr. Wonderful. They're silver tongue. You know what silver tongue is? Silver tongue is when you say all kinds of cute things, but you don't mean it. All right? They schmooze you. okay? And it's very hard to find the perfect spouse or partner. Now, when you've been in an abusive situation, like I have and many have, watching parents fight and all the stuff that I saw and grew up with, it's like we have a target. It's like it's written on our head, stupid, all right? Because we tend to go for the bad boys, and we don't even know it. What I was doing, and like women like myself are doing, is we're still looking for daddy's acceptance, daddy's love, daddy's whatever, okay? And this is, that's psychologically speaking, and this is why we tend to go back and we end up marrying people who are like daddy. So we end up in then mommy's and mommy's shoes. We are in the abusive relationship. I got beaten so many times, I can't tell you how many times I'm beaten. I have a handicap sticker out there. I can't stand for long periods of time because of my lower back and my hip. And now my knee, because I'm a little bit older. It sort of like spread or something. I don't know what it did. But you know, the point is this. When you've been beaten, you've been beaten. And it doesn't go away, all right? It doesn't go away mentally, psychologically, physically, yes, bruises can heal, bones can mend the way they maybe they mend right, maybe they don't, depending if you go to the doctors or not, the hospital, whatever. But the point is, you know, you're injured for life. Doesn't mean that you can't live your life. You have to get help. If you don't get help and you've been sexually abused, say, you grow up and you don't trust anyone, you have one partner after another, you can become either very frigid, very isolated from people because you're scared, or you can be the other way and become like a little runaround. You're too young, you know, to run around susong. But anyway, you become promiscuous, okay? So anyway, it can be either or, and I was both, okay? That's just the way I was, especially when I was with the bikers. I did have a good time, though. So anyway, the point is this. I made a lot of mistakes along the way. People do make mistakes along the way if they don't get help. You have no purpose in life. You don't love yourself. You don't like yourself. You don't even like other people. You don't know how to like other people. No one liked you. Okay? And that's where all that low self-esteem comes floating in. And you tend to be a follower, and you tend to like hang out with even people that are lower companions than yourself, lower people. I was with drug addicts that were shooting up heroin, and I was laughing. I just drank beer, you know? And so I was better than they were. I'm just a beer drinker, all right? No. My fingers started to bloat, and my kidneys started to pound, and I had to make a conscious decision to get away. I had to stop. I had to change my peers. Now this is what happens whether you've been sexually abused or whether you come from domestic violence. You tend to have the same type of problems, whether it's one or the other. And that's why I have information on where it actually intertwines. Our personalities are changed. Our brains are changed. We have something on the site, our www.nasca.org site, under the featured articles that mentions about the bomb in the brain. The bomb in the brain tells you how when you're a child or an adult who you know has been abused, your brain waves actually change. Other cells come running in to try and take over, and they do a pretty good job, but not the best, okay? Now, what you have to do when you go to like a crime scene, as I call it, because a lot of times people do get murdered, I had paperwork on that of how many, one out of three women a day get beaten by their spouse. That's a lot, okay? That's an awful lot. Now, it may not be beaten to the point of pulp, or beaten to it, but you're being abused. That goes for you guys here on the campus, too, with your campus dating. No means no. And if a person is intoxicated, you don't take advantage of them. You just don't do it. Okay? That's a crime. That's what it is. It's a crime. We have to learn to have more respect for ourselves and also for other people. We just simply do when it comes to things like that. There's nothing wrong with defending yourself. I'm all for that. But when you're intoxicated, you don't try to have people make decisions. Even if they say yes, that still is a no-no. You stay away from that. You know, you read the papers, you've discussed it, I'm sure, about the things that have happened on campus and things like that. You don't get involved with it. You walk away. You don't become a part of, okay? Now, with domestic violence, it changes your life to the point where you cannot make good decisions for yourself. You have flashbacks. A lot of times kids have flashbacks. I had nightmares. I still do. I had to sleep with the door open a little bit with a light on. And there's all kinds of things going to happen, you know, from child abuse or domestic violence. I went from one situation where I moved to another situation where I was sexually abused, and that went on for years, by the way, with several different people. I was just a kid. And the last time I was raped, I was 17. And then I went into a marriage where I was beaten. I mean, that's nuts, all right? It's nuts. And you would think that I would have learned somewhere along the way that, you know, this guy is trouble. But I didn't. And I've got the scars to prove it. Okay. Now, many of us women, we have to understand, and men too. I always have to get in there, the men, because 40% is a high number for domestic violence with men. Men are embarrassed. They don't want to say my wife hit me. All right? They're scared. They're embarrassed. They don't want the guy down the street or the guy down at the pub or something, you know, to talk about, hey, you know, he talks about his wife hitting him and all this other stuff. They don't want to hear that. And they don't want to get involved with it. They keep it to themselves. And this is what happens. If you're in an abusive situation where you saw, you know, all this domestic violence, excuse me, when you were growing up, many of those kids, that's why I need my water, many of those kids turn into abusers themselves. All right? I had a flu shot. Believe it or not. Okay. So they turn into abusers themselves, and they're drunk, so they get into drugs. Excuse me. Or they're doing both. This is what happens. They don't like themselves. And they take it out on their family and on their children. This is what they do. So you see, it's a big deal. And when you're a police officer, you're called to a scene, you have to look around and do the whole scope, as we call it, the scope. I've worked in detention center. I've worked at the Rahway Lifers program, Scared Straight. I worked at Greystone before they pulled them down, not the damn Greystone, psychiatric. I worked with the murderers. Probably should have been scared, but I wasn't. You get numb after a while, I think. You get numb. And that's not very good either. Even a police officer shouldn't be numb, because if you're numb, you can't really make good determinations for certain things. You're not feeling. And you need to see your psychologist. Some police officers, they have to go on the scene, they have to, you know, shoot, unfortunately. We need our cops. I love the cops. I have a lot of cop friends. And quite frankly, you know, you have to make some hard decisions. You just simply do. And sometimes it's, you know, taking a life. And then you have to go and talk to someone. You know, it's a good thing to do. So we know right from wrong. But you see, there are those people out there, the thugs, if you will, that don't care. They don't care about right and wrong. They're either greedy, maybe they're thieves, maybe they're molesters, maybe they're robbers, well, whatever the heck they are, they are. Maybe they're out there running guns. I saw that a few weeks ago. Really cool, all wonderful. In my town, Phillipsburg, I saw some of that. There's a lot of things that are going on. And to be a police officer is a wonderful thing. You're there to serve, and you put yourself on the line every single day. You do that. You say goodbye to your wife or to your husband in the morning, and especially if you live in city area, you know, urban areas. I've lived in all kinds of different areas. It's tougher, it's rougher, and you don't know what the hell's going to happen. You don't know if you're going to come home or not. Okay? So I applaud the police officers. And these dopes out there that say, you know, that are doubting the cops. If their house gets robbed, who do they call? They call the cops. It's so stupid. I want to read to you about battering personalities, okay? Because this is something that people who don't understand child abuse that well need to learn so that, you know, they don't make the same mistakes that I did. All right, it's called Red Flags of a Battering Personality. Have any of you heard of this? Red Flags? Okay. Now, this is by the Domestic and Sexual Assault Center right here in Warren County. I had them on the show not too long ago. No, maybe a year ago now. But anyway, Red Flags of a Battering Personality. Watch out for this stuff. I'm reading it. If you are uncertain whether your partner is abusive or not, or if you want to be able to tell at the beginning of a relationship if the other person has the potential to become abusive, there are behaviors you can look for. Now look for these things, all right? Jealousy. Many times we think that when the person we're going out with is jealous, oh, it's because they love me, okay? That's why they're jealous. And we get all giddy and silly. Well, no, that could be another thing. It could be a red flag. An abuser will always say that jealousy is a sign of love, all right? Jealousy has nothing to do with love. It's a sign of possessiveness. You're like a piece of property to him or her. Him or her, all right? In a healthy relationship, the partners trust each other, and unless one of them has legitimately done something to break that trust, then you should trust each other, all right? Controlling behavior. At first, the batterer will say this behavior is because they are concerned for your safety, a need for you to use this time well to make good decisions. They try to control everywhere you go, who you see, who your friends are, what you're doing, and all this other stuff. It's control. How much money you can spend. My husband better not say that to me, okay? Because I know what I'm spending. And if he wants to go out and buy, you know, pool sticks and stuff like that, I don't care. It's a give and take situation. You don't go overboard. But you have to learn, you know, what to tell your spouse, what not to tell your spouse or your partner. All right? That, otherwise, it's controlling. Again, don't go with this person. I don't like him or her. Stay home. Don't go to the mall. All this stuff. All right. We have number three, quick involvement. Many times we fall in love too fast. Many domestic violence victims only knew their abusers for a few months before they were living together. Mm-hmm. I could always talk to them. I never felt loved like this before. And you'll be pressured to commit in such a way that later on you may feel very guilty if you want to slow down the involvement or even break up. And if you are newly out, be careful. In other words, if you're a lesbian or if you're gay, be careful, because in that community there's a lot of problems. Abusers often target those they know that are gay, and that's where you have your bashings and stuff. You know, so you have to be careful, because one thing they do is they turn on each other really bad. I've seen that. Unrealistic expectations. Abusive people will expect their partner to meet all their needs. The perfect partner, lover, and friend. They say things like, if you love me, I'll need you, and all that other stuff, you'll do this for me, and you'll do that for me. No, you don't do that. Everyone has their own space, for one thing. That's something else you're going to learn. You stick your hand out, and you make a circle around like this. That is your space, and no one can come into that space unless you allow them into that space. All right? Isolation. They will tell you you can't go see your family. What, are you nuts? You don't tell me I can't go see my family. Things like that. It's isolation, which is very similar to control, but it's all apart. The abuser will accuse people who are supportive of causing trouble and may restrict the use of the phone. You can't use the phone? Oh, no, honey. All right. Number six, blames others for problems. They do something wrong, but it's always somebody else's fault. They can't take responsibility for their own actions. Blames others for feelings. Abusive people will tell you, you made me mad, and that's why I hit you. No. If you're a normal person, if you have problems, and all relationships have problems, okay? You just simply do. And what you do is you talk it out and you resolve it, and you can do that. Hypersensitivity. Abusers are easily insulted and may take the slightest setback as a personal attack. And then they go from there. Cruelty to animals or children. Now, if you've been sexually abused, this is going to blow your mind. We found out that even an 8-year-old will start abusing animals. Matt? And they think nothing of it. You see, they've been hit so many times and stuff, and been sexually abused so many times, that they don't have it up here to realize that it hurts, and they don't care anymore, too. It's almost like a shield that we put up, and we do put up a shield when we have been abused. But they will be cruel to animals or children. All right? You have to watch out for these things. Playful use of force and sex. Let me tell you something. It's okay to please your partner, but he shouldn't or she shouldn't expect things that you don't want to do and break up with you or say, I'm going to break up with you if you don't do this for me. I mean, some people don't like standing on their head, you know what I'm saying? You have to respect that. That's the way it goes. Verbal abuse. Verbal abuse is a lot of times people will say, oh, she or he didn't really mean it. There's a lot of sarcasm there. A lot of sarcastic remarks. Yeah, think about it. Because you see, if someone's very sarcastic to you, that's just like a precursor. It's like the beginning of showing you something of their real self. I didn't know that. Other people would point out to me, hey, Carol, you know, Paul, that was my husband, my first husband, he said that, and that was sarcastic. I didn't hear it. It didn't register. All right? I didn't want it to register. I was in love. And he had a Harley Davidson. So, well, you know, go away. Okay? All right. Rigid sex roles. Abusers expect a partner to play the female role, to serve them, and insist that they obey them in all things. The abuser sees you as unintelligible, or you're not intelligent, you're inferior, responsible for mental tasks, and less than that without the relationship. They will often tell you that no one else would want you or nothing without them. You are nothing without them. They will remind you you are everything that they've done for you. In other words, they make you feel like you're a quarter of an inch high. And this, if you believe that stuff, that works on your self-esteem. All right? Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, oh Lord Jesus. All right, my first husband, he would be the nicest guy to everyone out there in the world, all right? Cool dude, all right, nice. And then he'd come home, and he'd act like a maniac. So, you know, and he was like that with our children, too. I have two children by him. And he would act horrible. So that's the Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. He'd go out, he'd go to the bars, no problems, okay, have fun, go riding, all this other stuff, and then come home and beat me and shove the kids around. See, shove kids around, that's not cool. Kids this high, it didn't matter if they're this high or they're this high. You don't have the right to shove someone so hard that they lose their balance and they fall on the floor. What's that? That's abuse. You don't do that. Past battering. If you find out they have, if they're battering someone else, then that just shows that they have a problem. Stay away from them. Don't think that it's going to be different with you. Because as it says on one of the pamphlets from the domestic violence place here in Washington, in Route 57, which I agree with, you can't change your partner. You can't. You can only change yourself. So many times women, they go back and they say, and I have to keep saying women because usually, yes, there still are more women that are bad, it doesn't matter, of course. So, but, you know, there's a lot of guys that get hit, but, you know, we can't change our partner. We can only change ourselves. Now, there's only a couple more here, and then I'll go to something else. Threats of violence. Oh, yes. If you don't do this, I'm going to smack you in the head. You're going to get it. And they have it, you know, this look on their face. It can be maniacal, okay? Like my father, he was a nut. And he'd walk around, he'd have this look on his face. I'd go, oh boy, it's going to be bad tonight. Mm-hmm. I used to go under the couch cushions and pull out the bottles of wine and anything else that he had under there. And I'd go to the alley and I'd smash him. I only did that once. Because he knew that I had done it. He knew of the two children, even though my brother was a lot older than me. He knew that I was the feisty one. I used to chase people away from my brother who were picking on him. I'd pick up rocks and throw them at him. I'm here and he's way up here, all right? That's just the way I am. All right, so the threats of violence, you know, I don't like the way you look today, all right? Go change your clothes, go. And if the lady said, no, I like the way I look, you change your clothes, I'm going to kick you in the ass. It's as simple as that. That's violence, all right? This is how people get into terrible fights. All right, they talk back to each other. Before you know it, they're arguing. And then from that argument, a lot of times, violence happens. It's as simple as that. And then a call is made, hopefully. Hopefully. Society has got to wake up and realize that, you play Jennifer Aniston. Yes, you do. Anyway, society has to wake up and realize that we have to help each other. If you see a kid in distress, many times I see people turn their head and look the other way. So that's why I wear this ribbon here. But we're so close together with the domestic violence and all that stuff and child abuse. I didn't have a purple one or I would have worn it. But the point is this, we have to be a better people. Our children are in trouble, and also too, you know, people are in trouble. Don't turn and look the other way and see if someone else is going to call 911. You can remain anonymous, okay? You don't have to give your name. You don't have to. Make the phone call. All right. Any force during an argument. A batterer may hold you down, restrain you from leaving the room, push you, or shove you. They may pin you to the wall, saying, you're going to listen to me. Now those are the red flags, which I received right from Warren County, for the battering type personality. You may want to hold on to one of those. I think there's some more in there. Because you see, so often, because we don't know ourselves well enough, we don't know who the heck we are, you know, we end up getting into trouble because we don't know what signs to look for. If we've been battered, or our parents have been battered, one or the other. Unfortunately, some kids think, well, that's just the way it is, you know, this is how people live. And then all of a sudden they wake up and they realize, oh, this isn't the way people live. But they're so ingrained in them that they just simply end up with the wrong partner. And this is why you get flooded with calls, because some people are smart enough, nice enough, kind enough to call the police. And then the police get there, and again, they have to make their own decisions. Now, with these satellite divisions that we have, you know, through the police departments, like we have right there in Route 57, domestic and violence, they have help for you if you'll take it. I read just the other day that sometimes a woman has to be hit 35 times before she'll make a decision. That's bad. All right? I was very, very meek too. I should be dead because my husband had me from behind this way, and it was, I was in a chokehold. And he had hit me quite a few times. And we'd had a wonderful party. He was very drunk. It was just he and I alone together. And he decided to kill me, I guess. So we were standing in the kitchen. The kitchen is a very dangerous place because you have knives, you have scissors, you have all kinds of stuff in the kitchen, all right? So he had me over by the stove, and he had me by the neck, and I could not get out. He was a big guy. He weighed about 240. He was 6'1". And I was really small then, small petite, like you, okay? So, you know, he had me in such a way that I felt myself going under. I was going to go down. So the stove was there. I have two children. And I'm thinking to myself, it's either him or it's me. So I had a knife, a butcher knife on the stove top. And I was able to reach back and I got that butcher knife. And I was going to stab him, you bet. I am feisty. And I do believe in self-defense. No one's going to kill me. I have children. I love my children. So I took the knife, and I was, wherever I could stab him, I was going to stab him. I'm in a bad position here. I didn't know where I was going to stab him, but I was on my way. And I didn't know that his father had stayed over in his little camper outdoors. He came into the house, he saw what was going on, and he got the knife away from me, and he separated us. And he told me to go upstairs and stay away from Paul. I had no problems doing that, okay? The next day, we decided we had to get away from each other. The father-in-law stayed, he spoke to us, and we ended up, you know, somehow later getting divorced, yes. Now, what makes a person like that? It's a cycle. We talk about cycles. If you come from a family where there's a lot of domestic violence, it is a cycle because a lot of times, you know, you don't know what your grandparents were like. They used to hide a lot of stuff. When I was a kid, if I wanted to hear what was really going on with the adults, I used to go up to the door. They had a swinging door, and I'd put my ear to the door. So I could hear. How else was I going to find anything out? You know, and one time they pushed the swinging door and I went flying. I got caught. But, you know, it's just that things were different in the older days because, you had kid time and you had adult time. And the things that were spoken about in the adult time, they didn't want the kids to hear. All right? That's why there was kid and adult time. Go play. Go play in the street if you want. Okay? Just stay away from us. So, all right. If you come from a family that's very volatile, the kids are going to, that's all they know. That's what they know. So they become vicious, they can become violent, and they hurt people. And then they don't get good jobs, they do poorly at work, they fight with the other people at work there. They have too many problems. It's as simple as that, because they haven't gotten help. And again, yes, they can turn to alcohol and drugs, and maybe they're already one. And this is why you have, again, all the floods of the phone calls coming in. And I want people to continue to do that. Now, I have a video I want you to watch. And this isn't terribly uncommon. I became my mother's keeper, okay, at one point. So I understand this video, but it is heartbreaking. And maybe you could show that.
It's more listening to it, right? Then.
Yeah, well, I want them to see it, the whole thing, and to listen to it.
Okay, we're going to be back. Let me talk to you. Where's your mom? Are you in the party? What is his name? What is his name? Your father's name?
He's my son's father.
Okay, how old is he?
What's
going on? Lisa? What's going on?
Hey, mommy.
Call the hurting her.
He made it, mommy.
Okay, don't cry. We're going to send the police.
Okay.
Okay, now where's your mother at right now?
She's in the room fighting with us. Okay, can you listen to the police?
Yeah, they're on their way, but I'm going to keep you on the line until they get there, okay? Is your front door open?
Oh, no.
Okay, then go and lock it. Come back to the phone so the officers can get in.
That's right.
Okay, thanks.
Tremendous. At one time with domestic violence, you know, they didn't even talk too much about that. You know, it was like, well, you married him, you sleep with him, that's it. You know, that's the way it goes.
I'm curious. I want to get
feedback.
I want to get a reaction to that tape.
I wasn't comfortable with the operator, the 911 operator, because I feel almost like she endangered the child by having the child go. When the child said, "I want to go see," she said, "Okay." I mean,
well, she didn't. She asked her to open the door, which is fairly reasonable. But
at one point, she said, "I want to go see. Something happened. I want to go see." After the baby and mommy, and she said, "Okay." So she actually, I feel, she endangered the child by having her do something. She should have said, "No, stay on the line with me. Stay here."
Right.
Because there's nothing. She is obviously a smaller child.
So yes.
She sent her into a dangerous situation.
Exactly.
Which could have made it more dangerous because now the child is yelling, "The police are coming," which could have been further infuriated the father and.
Exactly.
And
I had the same reaction when
another
I first
child
saw that. She put her in harm's way.
She did.
And, okay, the kid was, I don't know, what is she, six maybe? You saw her.
She was like five.
Okay, yeah. So her little sister is only four, and then there's a baby. I mean, my God, these are tiny kids we're talking about. You don't have a little kid doing an adult's job. That's number one, all right? You don't put the kid in harm's way. I agree with you on that, because that was my first thought when I heard that. You're going to be a good cop.
I'm going to be an attorney.
Oh, well, you'll be a good attorney
to mop. I'm curious. I want to get some more reactions from
that. Yeah,
from
go ahead. Because
I want to tell something related to this call.
Go ahead.
But I want to get some reactions.
I mean, the father knocked the little sister out, and I agree with Beth. She shouldn't, Captain. And she shouldn't have told the little girl that it was okay to go see what was going on. Just say something like, "Stay here, stay on the line, stay on the line. If daddy comes after you, you run.
Exactly.
Do whatever you have to escape."
Right. practice.
Why did she tell them to go and lock the door? Don't they have probable cause? Can't the police just break down the door? Like, why would you have her go and lock the door?
That would be exigent service.
It'd take more time.
But letting the child go out, to go and lock the door.
That's what I'm saying.
Right.
She just kept...
No, no, you don't need a warrant in that situation.
Yeah, I'm kicking out the door.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. I think in this situation, Pam, I know you said, like, not to stay numb to this kind of thing. How can you not, though?
Okay.
I mean, because quite honestly, like, I would have to, because if, like, my gut, I mean, you know, my kind of, like, gut reaction would be, like, take the father out back and beat the living shit out of him. I'm sorry for cursing. I'm sorry, I don't mean, I'm sorry for putting this bluntly.
That's quite all right.
I don't jive with that. I had friends, like, in the military, like, do that to their kids, where I had to, like, intervene, because they just got too drunk. And, you know, as Marines, we kind of dealt with our, you know, someone being a jackass like that, you know, through not exactly the most diplomatic ways, but, you know, in this, being that, you know, obviously, you can't really do that as a cop, but I think you have to stay numb to that kind of situation.
There's a difference between being numb and being trained. When an officer loses the ability to have feelings, although maybe you can't show it at the time, all right, in here, you know, your heart is breaking because a child is, maybe you find a dead child when it's been murdered. This is horrific. I have a nurse friend who works with the coroner, and they just found a dead child. And she was bawling her eyes out, and she's been a nurse for 40 years, okay? And she also says, if you get to the point, like, you'll see these movies where a cop is standing there, he's eating a hot dog. I forget the name of that movie. You see the hot dog, and there's a dead body there. I forget which one it was. But if you actually lose all sensation, all right, and become so numb that it's like they're just another number, it's just this, it's just that, it can actually impair you and impair your judgment. It can. Because you're less concentrated on the dead body, okay? It's just another body, okay? I'll let somebody else come in, let them look at it, let them figure out what's going on, and you make up your report as you do, but it's not as good as it could be. You might even lose a couple of pointers there because, you know, it's just another dead body. Now, people who find, they have to go for help at times, many times when they get like that, because they're losing the ability to feel, they're losing the ability to see everything around them, to see the perfect scope, okay? They just simply are. Okay, yeah, he's dead, yeah, I see blood here, I see blood there, yeah, okay, he's got a bullet hole here, yeah. But maybe got stabbed in the back, too. You see, he's not doing his job completely. So, you know, you have other people that come in that actually do the body scene and the crime scene, and even the police aren't really allowed to touch because they bring in, you know, other people. But it's very hard. You have to get tough, yes. You have to get tough. I'll tell you something that scared the daylights out of me. I lived in Dover at one point. Lived there for 18 years. Didn't much like it. But there was a dead body in the Rockaway River. Now, this guy's walking down the street, Richards Avenue, and he's going, Maria! Maria! I thought it was some guy. We all did. People were outside. We thought he broke up with his girlfriend. He's been very dramatic or something. But none of us saw the knife in his chest. Okay? We were so busy listening to Maria. We didn't see the knife in his chest. Okay. So daylight comes and they found his body in the Rockaway River. And there were 10-year-olds standing around, little boys, standing around his dead body. And there was nothing coming from them. No emotion was coming from them. Now, most 10-year-olds would be screaming or something. help, help, look at this, wow, come here, you know, whatever. These kids are standing there, just looking at us, you know. So, what I'm trying to get across to you is this. Yes, it's good to be tough. You have a hard job to do. You have to be tough to a certain degree. But when you find yourself becoming numb, where it doesn't bother you at all, then it's time to go and see someone and talk about the lack of empathy. Okay, the lack of this, the lack of that. That was life. I don't care if he was an SOB. He was life. He's somebody's son, all right? You have to keep a little bit of that in you, okay? You have to. It's bad if you can't. And that had to be explained to me, because I'm the same way you are. I want to take a bat and sit and split it over someone's head if I see them hurting someone, especially a kid, okay? But let me tell you something. I've seen in cases, like say with children who have been sexually abused, the family gets involved, they beat the son of a gun up, okay? And those bruises heal, and what does he do? He takes off. That doesn't solve the problem, he belongs in jail. Because you see, if you just beat someone up, it might make you feel better. Oh, I got that son of a gun. But he can still, he's mobile. So what you have to do is control your feelings and have that person, you know, arrested, yes. So that he can't go out and do that to other children. They have found that with pedophiles are people who like children that are pre-pubescent, and what they do is they look for the kids who walk with their heads held down, and you know they look lonely. Maybe they're not poorly taken. Maybe they're poorly taken care of. They're not dressed right. Maybe their hair's dirty, nappy, whatever. And those are the kids they target. They target those kind of kids. They're easy prey because they're looking for a kid that needs someone, all right? Needs a friend. So what they do is they take that kid, they kidnap that kid, and they rape that kid, and sometimes they murder that kid, and other times they don't. Well, if they don't, like they didn't with me, I was kidnapped too. I lived in New York, and I lived in Staten Island. And I had this guy stalking me, and I didn't know. He followed my city bus home, he knew where I lived. So at this end was Victory Boulevard, at this end was another street, it was a street name, Signs Road. And he knew that he could go straight through, so if he picked me up here, he could drop me off here and I would get home. The house was in the middle. Now he knew this. And my daddy wanted to take me to Coney Island. I like Coney Island. So, not today I don't. Coney Island's very big. But I liked it when I was a kid. And, so that was a cool thing to do. So I was waiting for him, and the guy just simply grabbed me and took me away. That's it. It takes 30 seconds to abduct a child if the situation is right. 30 seconds. If the kid is close enough to your vehicle, you can just grab him like this. This is why you can't have kids walking alone. Not anymore. You can't. Teenagers shouldn't go to the mall alone. You should have them call home once or twice once they get there, as they're leaving, so you can keep track of them. All right, you have to. There's a lot of human trafficking out there. You're going to learn about that. Maybe you already have. We deal with that all the time on our show, the human traffickers. It used to be that the drugs were the big money makers. Now it's human trafficking with kids. Yeah, especially kids. And drugs comes in there second, and then comes the gun runs. So those are the top three. 1, 2, 3. Okay? So when you become a police officer, there's all kinds of things you're going to learn. Okay? And you're going to have to learn how to handle situations. You're going to do a lot of role playing. Maybe you do that here. Role playing. You know, and things like that. Now, when I said before, the attention center taught me this, you go around, that's your space, that's your circle, you go all the way around. If someone comes into there, that's invasion, because you didn't, you know. And if you shove someone, and you know, hey, that's assault. kids in school. They're always assaulting each other. All right?
Now they're assaulting teachers.
And now they're assaulting teachers. Look what's happening. I don't know what the answer for the guns is, to be honest with you, because if I want to get a gun, I can walk down the end of my block where I live and I can get one right now if I want. There's always going to be guns available. You know? And quite frankly, I believe in protecting myself. But when you get the guns in the wrong hands of the maniacs, you can have any law you want, and they're going to get the guns anyway. That's why there was a gun loan not too long ago. Okay? Now, you, just come here for a second. Jeez, I was like that once. All right, now listen here. Now this, you're in my space right now.
Exactly.
Yeah, okay. And that's sort of like making me a little bit nervous. Now, I want you to put your finger out and you're poking at me.
Oh, I got it. Do you want me to make contact or do you want me just to...
All right, now see, I'm getting scared now. Now, I'm showing you something. Okay, I'm getting a little bit scared because you're pointing your finger at me. You can get a little closer. Go ahead. Now, tell me, you're a stupid son of a bitch. Go ahead, whatever you want to say, I don't care. Don't be scared. I don't care what you say. Okay. I don't like you. I'm mad at you. Whatever. Come on.
You're a stupid son of a bitch. I can't believe you did that. What's wrong with you?
What the hell's wrong with you? You nut, you stupid blonde.
That's right, I'm a stupid blonde, and you're in my fucking face.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
You're in my face, all right? Yeah?
What are you going to do about it?
What are you going to do about it, huh? What are you going to do? What are you going to do? Oh, you're going to push me, huh? Well, I can push back. Okay, let me show you something. There's spots on a person... But if they come after you, that you can, you know, the eyes, huh? Oh, okay, you know that stuff. Okay, good. If someone gets too close to you, oh, you can go sit down now. Thank you. Very good. She got feisty there. That's good. When someone gets in your face, and they're going to, you feel threatened. You do. You feel threatened. So the best thing to do is to go for the eyes. All right? People always say go for the groin if it's a guy. But if you go for someone's eyes, all right, both hands are going to come up and you get them good. And they go like this because they can't see. They know it's their eyeballs. It scares them. They don't like it. And that gives you a chance to run. Okay? If the person's way high and you can't get to their eyes, that's when you consider the groin. All right? That's when you consider the groin. So, you know, there are ways of doing it. If someone has you like my husband had me, and I didn't know how to defend myself at that time, first of all, you don't try to get away because that's just going to make it, you know, more behold on you. You actually back into him, okay? And if I had done that, there was a wall, and I would have been able to smash him against the wall, and that probably would have broken the hold. And also, too, you can try to get them in the ears, the slapping of the ears. But it's all situational. You'll know what to do at the time. You can take your heel, and you can kick them very hard, this part of their body, right here, okay? If you can't get to their groin, because of the situation you're in, then you kick them that way, this way, okay? And that makes them go like this, and then you can go like this. There's all kinds of ways of protecting yourself. Women should take self-defense, obviously you have. Women should take self-defense classes. Because we live in a world today, and men too should do it, it's good for both of you. We live in a world today where there's a lot of things going on. Look at this ISIS thing going on. Let me tell you something, honey. When that came up to me, I'd certainly do my best. You know, if you don't like me, go home. You know, don't try to control me and all this stuff. This is our country. We need to take it back. All right? Now, I don't want to get political here. I want to go back to what I was doing. Because I can talk about politics for an hour. All right, let me go over here. Do you talk to them about any of this stuff here, the legal aspects of domestic violence?
No, because it's not a victimology class.
Okay.
So I basically cover the tenets of what it's like to work in law enforcement, and one of the things that we get in law enforcement is a lot of domestics. I will say we get, you know, five homicides in Chatham, we're all, during my career, we're all domestic violence related.
Your shooting wasn't domestic, right?
Yes, it was. It was the husband killed the wife, killed the 8-year-old, stabbed the three and a half year old 13 times. Kid lived. What I was going to say before, you know, this call, I heard it the first time when she first sent me the link for this. Yeah, you know, I listened to it, and it's a very chilling to listen to. It's upsetting, and I found myself very upset by the call. And in listening to it again, I recall why. We had for quite some time, Chatham Township dispatched for Harding Township, which was a smaller police department which bordered us. And we had a call very, very similar to where a child called in. The father was going berserk, screaming and what have you. Unfortunately, in that case, he did kill mom, and then while they were on the phone with our dispatcher, killed the kid right there. Now, that was in Harding, I remember, you know, them responding. It was a very tough call to listen to. I mean, when you're sitting there, you're the dispatcher, you're taking this information, and you're listening to the person on the other side of this phone get killed, and there's nothing you can do except get the cars there. And, you know, they were going as fast as they could. I mean, they went Mach 1 to get to that get to that house, but they didn't get there in time. And I can tell you that the stress of that is just incredibly overwhelming. Like, we're here to help. We're here to do everything we can. And there are times where everything we do isn't enough. It's like the Mets, right? Mets brought their, I don't think they brought their A game, but they got beat. And, you know, sometimes we get beat, and we get beat in a way where somebody's life is lost. Sometimes we go to a medical call, not even a domestic violence. Somebody has a heart attack, and you do everything you can, and you lose them. And those are tough. I'm not going to kid you. They do become routine after a while. I mean, it's like you get there, you know, you're pumping on another chest, you're setting up another defib, you're putting O2 in there into them. They come back, they don't come back. It's great. I mean, there's been a couple times where, you know, I've had a life save, and you get to go and shake hands with the person. You know, we saved a baby one time. One of our dispatchers, you know, walked them through, and they were choking, and, you know, kid basically blew, stopped breathing, and they, you know. Those are great, but then there's the losses, you know, and, you know, I'm not going to kid you, I listened to it, I still get emotional, you know, I dealt with five homicides, I dealt with a lot of deaths and stuff, and this stuff still gets to me, and everything, and I think it always will, because there is always that emotional connection. I connect with that, I hear the pain that girl was going through, and that's what you have to, you know. You're not going to be able to save everybody, but we're going to do the best we can to save as many as we can, and to get in there. And I agree, they're talking my guys. You know, there's so many times you just want to pound some asshole into the dirt. You do. You want to thump them up, like, you know, when we were watching the video and the guy took the guy that was under arrest and he slammed him into the police car. You just want to do that, but guess what? You can't.
You do it the right way, and then that person will end up where they're supposed to be.
Right.
You do it the wrong way, they walk somewhere.
Yep. So you gotta, and this is one of the challenges in law enforcement is recognizing, because I did the domestic violence training for our department for years, and you know, I talk about this, you know, when you're in that relationship, and I think that's one of the things. People don't understand, like they say, well, just break up with them. Let me tell you something. When it's the fabric of your life, it's kind of like saying, well, I got a cut on my arm, let me just slice my arm off. I'll just slice your arm off. Well, it's my arm. Well, that's the kind of connection that people feel. When you're in this abusive relationship, you can't you know, it would be like saying cut off your arm or cut off your legs. And for some people, they are so dependent on that other person that it, I don't know, it, like the idea of losing the financial sense. I had a woman, and I've often thought about trying to get her in here because she was the epitome of the victim. She had been sexually molested over the course of, you know, I think decades, repeatedly beaten, and it got to the point, like, our officers hated going to her house. Hated it. Why? Diane's calling again. Oh, you know, it's like, here we go again. It's like, yeah. And so, when I finally got involved with it, I was a detective, and I don't even remember why I got involved with this thing, but I remember going, and I'm sitting there, and she would talk all scatterbrained. She'd be all over the place and stuff. And I remember just thinking, like, there's got to be a reason. I didn't even understand the dynamics of what happens in an abusee's mind. But they get so scattered that they can't connect time frames and everything. So when she's giving details, like, to the cops, it's like, give me the facts. Well, what the hell? Like, she's all over the place. She's talking about 2 years ago. And everything, you know, so they would get annoyed with her. And she really was scattered in how she would deliver the stuff. But I started working with her. I felt for her. And so ultimately, we got her out, and she did get divorced from her husband, and she did slowly start to put her life back together. And I can remember then she starts dating it. And what you said about this thing that they... It's like they're attracted to the exact person that they shouldn't be.
Right.
And I remember she got into a relationship with another guy, and she comes in and she starts saying that. And again, this is, I got close enough to her that she felt comfortable sharing this, but she started talking about her sex life with this new boyfriend. Now, I already knew at this point that. That was like something that she was completely uncomfortable with. And I sat there and I said, Diane, you've told me that this is something that you're completely uncomfortable with. And yet now I said, it sounds to me like you're falling back into the same thing. And she was. And she wound up giving him the boot. But it was only because, again, she was willing to share that, which, again, I'm thinking back and I'm like, it's kind of weird that, you know, she was just coming in, talking to me, the detective. There was no investigation. I maintained that kind of relationship with her after we got her out of the house and reestablished and everything.
It's not uncommon.
Yeah.
A lot of the women go to the divert sergeant the liaison and talk to because they kind of build up a bond, and some of the officers that I know say the women actually end up liking them, like,
oh, yeah?
A lot more because they see them as somebody that's helping them and rescuing them.
So right.
Issue.
No. She.
She liked you.
She did.
No, I had. I did. I felt a bond with her of some sort that, you know, obviously we share that. And I've actually thought about trying to reach out to her. I mean, I haven't talked to her now. In years, because it did get a little awkward. Finally, that it just, you know.
She liked you.
I don't know. There was nothing that ever that went that way.
But, you know, she liked you.
But she would be. She was very interesting to hear her story, and just, you know, and again, I don't know. I hope by now she's gotten herself somewhat put back together, but it was...
It takes a long time.
Yeah.
I've been beaten so many times in my life that I can't tell you how many. I have bulging discs, I got all kinds of things, and sexually abused. And yet I would continue to go out with the same type of person. And I didn't want to leave those relationships. He has... go ahead, you have a question.
I know one effective tool that...
we met when I was still in like my last 2 years left in, or about a year and a half left in the Marine Corps. And we told ourselves, like, after we had got to know each other, and we tell ourselves, and being on the verge of me pursuing my career as a state trooper, we said, whatever we do, no matter how many disagreements we have, arguments, whatever, we'll never go to bed angry.
Good for you.
Like, and that, and even to this day, yeah, we have our, like, little, I don't necessarily, not fights, like, you know, disputes, arguments, stuff like that, disagreements, and it, that has worked wonders. Like, in a I'm not on the job yet, but I said, I'm like, you know, and that's, like, one common ground that her and I have, like, come to, like, whatever we do, we don't go to bed angry.
Well, that's like, that's a good thing to do, okay? Because too often people do go to bed angry, and they wake up the next day and they carry it on. You know, they still have an attitude because they didn't resolve the problem the night before. Yeah.
You know what it is? It's, you're talking about financial, like, reasons women stay, but it's also the dysfunction becomes really normal. You know, so you know it happens so slowly, you don't even realize that it's happening.
Yeah.
That's good that you always keep conversation going and
that's
talking
good.
And being able to talk to each other. That's great.
That's good.
And what I've also seen too is that the spouse, whether male or woman, they'll become the enabler almost. Like, and I've seen this so many times, often than not. You'll have friends, family, will like be begging, break up with him or her. Oh no, he been like making sudden, as you refer to, you know, like people will make excuses, the spouse will make excuses
all the time
on why him or her is doing said abuse to them, the abuser to the abusee, and I've seen that so many often than not. I've had a personal friend that dealt with that, and I was like, I'm like, why?
Because you don't love yourself, you don't like yourself enough. The other person has beaten you down, you know, in a psychological way, and especially if you come from a dysfunctional home on top of it all, like I did. I stayed 13 years in a relationship where I was being beaten all the time, and I had no place to go with two little kids. And at that time, I didn't have that much education. You know, no one cared whether I went to school. I went out and partied. The heck with that. You know, that was fun, all right? I didn't care, because they didn't care. So what happens is, you know, it's what you know. You grow up with the way, you know, you're taught or not taught, and you tend to stay longer in abusive situations like that. If someone cares enough about themselves, they're not going to let someone stand there and call them filthy, foul names, you know, or hit them in the head, or whatever, you know. They're not going to stand for it. But a lot of times people don't like themselves, and this is what happens. You know, so they tend to believe, like children are sponges, their minds are sponges. And if you keep telling a kid you're stupid, you're never going to amount to anything, chances are that kid is going to believe it. Because your parents are the ones that are supposed to nurture you, and they wouldn't lie to me, right? They love me. Well, parents that love their kids, they don't say stuff like that. They just don't do it. Instead, they encourage them. They let them make their mistakes, but they encourage them along the way. And they know that they can tell mommy and daddy anything. And this is something else, and that'll be for April, where we have to, you know, teach people, teach society, you know, to teach their children boundaries, the bathing suit area. That's a no-no. This is teaching children now. We have so many different areas that need to be covered with abuse, whether it be domestic violence, whether it be child abuse. There's no ribbon really for child abuse. You go into Michael's and you see breast cancer, you see yellow for the troops, you see red for whatever, and the multicolored one for the gay rights, and I think green is for addicts, I'm not sure. You don't see a blue one. Why?
Yeah.
Oh, there you go. Keep them for April.
Anybody want a...
Yeah, every time you look at that ribbon, all right, think of a child who's being abused. Two-thirds of kids don't tell. Remember that. They're scared of the abuser. They're embarrassed. If it's a family member, they're really in trouble. Because who are they going to tell? But maybe it's daddy that's doing it to them. Or maybe it's mommy that's doing it to them. Who are they going to tell? So what they do is they grow up all, I use the word twisted, because they have such thoughts that are, you know, not right. You know, they're not taught correctly. They might act out. We have a resources page. If you wrote down the website, go to the resources page. That's right here. And let me explain something to you. It's all a menu. See, there's a resources page right there. You click onto the resources page, and a menu drops down. And it tells you how to speak to your children about sexual abuse. It tells you how to, guide them so that if someone's going to come towards them, what to do, okay? I have to tell this little tiny story. This is funny. There was this little boy who was walking down the street. He was 10 years old. This vehicle pulls over, and the guy pulls him in. It's a truck, you know, like a truck. So he pulls him in, and the kid says, "Where are we going? Who are you? Blah, blah, blah." And the guy tells him to shut up, kid, you're going with me. Well, he was going to sexually abuse him. He liked little boys. So anyway, they're going down the street. Now this kid came from what I remember, a Hispanic family. And they were very much into religion and so forth, and the Catholic. So he was going to, all kinds of like Sunday school and all this other stuff. So anyway, they're going down the street, and all of a sudden he goes, "Jesus loves me, yes he does, for the Bible told me so." And he's going on and on and on with these religious songs. And the guy says, "Shut up!" like that. And he says, no, you can see he's really irking the guy, right? So he continues to go, "Oh yeah, oh yeah, hallelujah, oh yeah," like this, right? The guy pulls over, opens up the door, and says, "Get out!" So the kid got out. Now, that's a true story. That was about a year ago. And it was on AOL, too. But that's a true story. Now, you never know what's going to save you when you're in a situation like that. But the 10-year-old, I don't know, he's probably scared. He's calling to Jesus to help him, you know? But I thought that was a cool little thing there, yeah. But we have to teach our children so that they don't, fall into that. They should never walk alone at the age of 10. I don't care if they're only going a block away. You don't do that. All right. Okay. What time is it?
It's 11:24. I have actually some videos.
You want to show a few? Okay, that's good. Okay.
I don't know if. So this is actually when I taught domestic violence. This is a PowerPoint that I had used. So I don't know if anybody has seen. There were some videos that. So I'm just going to flip through and just show you some of these. But this was a ad that was running to sort of highlight the impact of domestic violence. And I don't know if anybody's seen this, but.
Please. She spilled my coffee.
I'm sorry, sir.
You fucking bitch. I'll bring another coffee. How do you like that?
Stop it!
You wouldn't get away with it here. You shouldn't get away with it at home.
I don't know if,
What the hell did that commercial ad? I don't know.
There was a series of them. They had, so I use that as kind of my wake-up call, like, all right, we're here for domestic violence. Because it is disturbing. And quite honestly, this, sometimes it does play out in a public place, but for the most part, not. But So, and then I talked about essentially what domestic violence is, defined, you know, and again, with anything, you know, they have to define it legally, so there are, you know, if you go back, so in order to have domestic violence, the suspect has to be 18 or over. Now this is, I haven't checked if the law has been updated, but so if it's two juveniles, it's not domestic, or at least it wasn't. You know, now at one time it was only if you were married. This is going way back. When they first came out with it, it was between a husband and a wife. Then they added dating relationship. So if you were dating, then it was, then they added that it had to be the same sex, or it had to be opposite sexes. Then they added same sex. Then they basically said if you've ever lived together. So what that brought in is like if you're in college, you got a roommate. 20 years from now, you get together with your roommate, right? If you've ever lived together, technically, there could be a power relationship. And that's what domestic violence is about, is it an abuse of the power in a relationship. So your roommates, and your roommate is an abuser, right? They start taking advantage of you, become the abusee in some respect. 20 years from now, you know, it's like you're, you know, hey, what's going on, blah, blah, and you get into a fight, guess what? It comes under the domestic violence. Mm-hmm. Yes.
In Sussex County, the victim's advocate for the prosecutor's office will term a familial relationship, so even if it's a child, as an act of domestic violence. So.
If it's
in a familial relationship, like okay. Even if it's a child in the household,
it makes sense.
It becomes a issue of domestic violence. Mm-hmm. At least
but
in my county.
Even if they're all, if it's only the juveniles involved.
If it's a parent doing something to a juvenile or another sibling with another two siblings, and the police get called in, the victim's advocate will term it a domestic violence issue.
And then there's specific offenses, which it really kind of covers the gamut here, but basically if it's outside of one of these offenses, and I'm not sure because, you know, you have anything from harassment, which is really a catch-all, so if it's not one of these, it's going to be either harassment, criminal mischief. There's not too much that I can think of that would fall outside of this. Actually, there's nothing really that, you know, but... You know, in the event that there is something that was done in here, now, you know, making a posting on Facebook or something, like there may be some subtle way now with social media that they might have to add something in here.
Yeah.
But, you know, anyhow, there could be something that they could do today through social media or something else. You know, that they've done that doesn't get caught up in one of these. But the idea is you have to specify the crime. And basically, who's protected? They have to be 18 years old or older, or emancipated. So basically, and so what is emancipated? Well, there's a domestic link here, which is basically spouse, household member. This is, you know, if they ever lived together, if they have a child in common, or if they had a dating relationship. And emancipated is basically that, you know, they've had a child or they've been declared. And so basically I identify in here what the domestic violence is. This is the power control wheel. I'm sure you guys have all seen some version of this. It's pretty common. It's like in all the books. They usually have, you know, anyhow, it talks about, and then this was just, this is kind of silly, but even wildlife can get into fights. Talk about, you know, although those two males, I think, you know.
I called the best time I got here.
Dangers of. All right. Domestics are one of the most dangerous calls to go on.
I remember me telling him that I was going to get a divorce, and, you know, he threw me against the wall. He said, "You'll get a divorce, bitch, when I tell you you'll get one." I felt like somebody very dear to me had died. I felt like somebody that I loved had died, and it was me. I started refinishing antiques probably about 14 years ago. When you do an antique, you can't like sand like a maniac, and you can't use electric sanders. You have to do it just real gentle, real slow, and you know, it can take you a week to get out one big huge scratch in a chair, and you just do it that way. And you know, a lot like me, it's been a slow process getting the strip back down to the original 23-year-old girl I used to be, but I'm there. Well, I was a single mother with a 4-year-old little boy, barely making ends meet. You know, car didn't work, lived in what we call, we joke and call the Roach Motel. Lived in a Roach Motel south side. First time I met him, I really didn't like him. I thought he was a jerk. I thought he was kind of, you know, pompous and all the things I'm not. But he was persistent. And he made me see that it was a way out and that Ryan could have a better life, you know, financially and stable. I wanted him to have a house, the white picket fence, you know, the American dream. And Bill made me see that he could give me that, give me those things for Ryan. And so that's kind of how it escalated. Yeah, I fell in love with him. I think I did. I found out later that I did love him, because that's what made it so hard to get away and to be free of it, was because I kept thinking, well, I love him, I can change him, I can fix him. The very first time I was abused physically was after we hadn't been married probably 5 months, and I was pregnant with Shelby. It scared me because I realized I didn't know who he was. I was like, okay, who is this guy swinging me and my kid around, you know, throwing me up against walls? It all happened so fast. He comes in and I'm like, what's going on? What's going on? He doesn't tell me. He shoves me aside, and then he locks me in a closet and proceeds to beat Ryan, who was just a baby. And when I got free of the closet and got out, and he said, he grabbed me by the throat and threw me up against the wall, and so hard that my head, you know, bounced back against the sheetrock, and basically said, you know, if you don't like it, you can get out. He kept saying, Mom, it'll be okay. He protected me. I didn't protect his own. He protected me. Mom, it's going to be okay. He wasn't scared. I was. We were in a crowded nightclub that night with a friend of his, and I'm just sitting there, and he reaches over and just knocks my lights out, knocks me to the floor. And it shocked me. I was like, I can't believe he's doing it in front of people. I just laughed. I went and sat in the car, and he comes out there, and he's just talking crazy stuff, like, you know, you're such a whore, and I know you're sleeping with so-and-so, and I mean, it was always about who I was sleeping with, like, you know, you'd really want another man in your life when you're with somebody like this, you know, and so I sensed that I was in danger. I sensed that I was in deep trouble. I was in trouble this time, and I got out of the car and was going to go get the bouncer, you know, somebody that could help me, and he had been drinking, but he didn't have to drink to be violent. And I hadn't been drinking. And I could feel, I could hear gravel crunching behind me, and I was almost to the door. And when I turned around, he hit me on both sides of my chest, and it was like an anvil, and it literally knocked me over the hood of 2 cars. And, you know, I ended up on my hands and knees, and I'm bleeding and whatnot. And the bouncer guy comes out there, and I say, go get so-and-so, go get his friend. Well, they proceed to tell the bouncer that I've been drinking, and the bouncer believes it. And leaves to go inside and leaves me with him. It was the first time I ever really felt certain that I wasn't going to live that night. That last time he tried to choke me to death, and the police officers come in there, and you know, here I am in my $150,000 house in a fluent neighborhood, and you know, and I've got mascara running down my face, and choked so bad there's hand marks around my throat, and I'm crying, and my girls are crying, and they're like, we will help you if you will help yourself. And I said, okay. A male member of the grand jury stood up and said, he's gonna kill her, we have got to do something. And that's kind of how it all got going. One of the court advocates, and I'll never forget her, I mean, I haven't talked to her in probably 8 years, her name is Caroline Darby, and I'll never forget her. She came up to me, and she was like a little debutante, you know, sort of blonde hair and flipped out. She was so cute. And I'm sitting there in total freak out mode, and she said, I'm with the YWCA, and I'm just here to hold your hand. And that's what she did. She didn't try to make me make decisions. She didn't try to make me not be with him or without him. And she held my hand. She gave me numbers. She gave me lawyer contacts. She told me what the why did. And she basically, without me even having to ask her, showed up at every court event. And sometimes she'd just sit there and hold my hand. Sometimes she would, you know, tell me what I could expect as far as my rights. It was like, you know, giving me some angel wings right there, keeping me lifted up, letting me know I was going to get through this, and there's going to be people to make sure I get through it. And at my weakest moment, they were just a phone call away. And at my strongest moment, they were just a phone call away. And that I'm not bad. I didn't do anything wrong. I didn't ask for it. I didn't deserve it. And they're everything rolled up into one. They're your lawyer, your counselor, your confidant, your best friend. I think the why made me realize that I was something and that I could do it.
So I actually have a whole mess of videos in this thing. So any.
There's one more thing I want to get out really quick. If you go to our website, www.nasca.org, that sort of like brings back memories. If you click onto the country here, our country, it's very colorful, you see that? If you click onto that, it'll open up and you'll see another picture of the United States. And then you'll see other countries, because we're worldwide now, our show. And that's the Stop Child Abuse Now show. It's internet, but it's also going to be more than internet. We're going to be on regular radio stations, okay? But anyway, the point is this. For adult survivors, if you know of any adult survivors of child abuse or domestic violence, we live in New Jersey, go to New Jersey, it'll open up, and there are tons of adult groups that people can go to, you know, for help. And this is talk therapy, you talk to each other, you know, all kinds of stuff. And I'm not saying that I'm not downing, you know, psychologists or anything else like that. That's good too, don't get me wrong. But the group is good because you make friends. If you're a person that doesn't have any friends, or that person, you know, doesn't have friends, whatever, have them go to group. And you seem to know what I'm talking about. There are groups all over the place. I don't care what state you live in. Some have more than others. Morris County has a lot. You know, Warren County does have a few. And you'll see my name there in Warren County. You always call me. I get calls at 2 o'clock in the morning. But if someone is having a problem, call, okay? That's for the adult survivors of child abuse and of course, too, if you're being, you know, domestically abused that way, too. The two are so related. They just simply are, okay? So I'm going to go, too. I mean, it's almost time for us to go, I think. And I want to thank you for this time here. And well, you're welcome. And quite frankly, yeah, okay, you know, in April, we do have Child Abuse Awareness Month, and I recognize you, I've seen you before. We have that Child Abuse Awareness Month, and it's up to us, okay? The survivors like myself, and then people too, you know, to get this out for awareness sake, that we have to work as a society to help kids. And if you go to that resources page, you get all kinds of information, how to help kids, when to help kids, who to call, who not to call, and there's a lot of other things there. This is tiny print here, but there's recovery, there's homepage, a lot of information. There's a menu that drops down under each title here, resources, about us. You'll see me on there about 5-10 times, I don't know. Contact people on there too. There's about 25-30 people that you can call in the middle of the night if you have to. I stay up until 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning anyway. I sort of like run the streets where I live. In Phillipsburg, it's kind of rough there. And I do a lot of research, so I'm up, all right? So you can, you know, if you're in trouble of some sort or you know someone who needs help, you know, don't be afraid to call, because that's what we're here for. We're here to help people, all right? We want children to be treated better, and the adults who never got help as a child, they need to talk to someone. And that's where the groups come in. They are so cool because you make friends there. Those, and you know, no one makes fun of you or anything. You're all there for the same reason, right? So, it was nice meeting all of you. Are we done?
I'm done. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you. And I'll see you again, all right? And remember, April, maybe some of you can help out, huh? I don't know. That's up to you to decide, you know, who's going to...
Well, in April, you know, it'll be a class. I know a couple people have expressed an interest. Mm-hmm. In the victimology class, what we did, I've been running victimology now for a couple of years, and every year for Crime Victims Week, we do a class project. And the class project expanded to having a couple guest speakers. Carol's one of them. And we had a self-defense seminar and a candlelight vigil, which Carol actually organized. So this year, coming up, since we have kind of a new standard for where the class project is going to go, we're looking to really fill Crime Victims Week with a lot of cool stuff. And that is actually, that is the report for the class. That is, you know, that's the sort of final project. And everybody gets a piece of the project, and it comes together over the course of the week. So this week we'll be doing more stuff. So victimology in the spring, cool class. Definitely sign up for that.
Okay, so, that's great. Okay.
The, so there's, but do you want to end?
Oh, yeah, I can stop this now. Yeah.